So.
Go on.
No, no, no. That was your what?
No, I don't need to tell you a personal story about my life.
Oh. Who said you didn't need to?
Well, your tone.
Oh, okay.
What's going
just
on?
Just curious. Oh, not much. Not much. Not much. Just listening to some wrestling podcasts.
Are you?
Yeah, it's the, well, I mean, they have a radio, their own minor radio station in Alabama. They're called Beyond Ringside.
Okay.
And these are a bunch of ex-indie guys.
How is it?
And it's not bad. It's not like Cornette. It's not like Pritchard or Bischoff, but it's...
Us.
It's not nothing. Yeah, or us. Yes, exactly. But it's good. I mean, it's fine. Like, I respect their opinions, you know.
Why?
The host is very... Maybe I respect it because I'm not watching it as much, so I don't differ or not. So there's that. It could be, but they don't say anything that is, you know, they really respect the business, so that's probably why.
Right. Now, does the business deserve respect?
It was so funny because, like, actually, when I left it, the guy was saying the wrestling business doesn't owe us anything, and I was just like, where are we going with that? That was literally what he said. Yeah, he's very long-winded, and he'll make very dramatic statements and then back it up with a very long-winded reasoning and dramatic kind of thing.
Does the long-winded reasoning end up making sense, or is it just so long?
It makes sense, but it's not worth it.
Yeah, I think you've forgotten the point.
Yeah, you totally forgot it. And then what his friend – like, he has a bunch of friends that are like – some of them are quite good to the point. One guy's clearly a – total nerd and like has never had a social life other than wrestling, like, and he's annoying, but his best friend is super annoying only to him though, and so the host will just go on with this long thing about if you can get yourself over first as a heel, they will love you as a babyface.
Sure.
And then like his friend will like just stay silent.
But that's not always true.
No, it's not always true. I'm just giving an example.
Like,
right?
IRS so, never got over as a baby face.
No, no. But what his best friend will do to like troll him basically is like the host will go on and on and on about this long, long, long thing, and then they'll just be dead air, mm-hmm. and he'll say, "Mark, yeah? Did you have anything to say?" Like, that's it every time. It's like, yeah. Like, as if he wasn't listening the entire – the first few times, like, it annoyed me. Like, I was like, are you not paying attention? But, like, he's just trolling him. Like, it's just totally – he never chimes back. He never – yeah.
What is the best take you've heard on that show?
Oh.
Like, something you heard that was like, wow, that's a really good point.
That's a good question. I don't remember. I don't know. What was the best point? I don't know, because like I would rank that in something like historical, and they don't delve. Oh yes, best point. They did a podcast. They did an episode. This was good. What if the Undertaker had jumped ship to WCW in the right before the Attitude Era, when right. he had his chance? And they break down how important he was. Because you would never have the Hell in the Cells. You would never have Kane as a character. Mick Foley never would have got – you wouldn't have had the Hell in the Cells with Mick Foley. Austin wouldn't have been able to be legitimize himself with him. Like, because he was so critical to the story writing and the credibility of everybody else that if he went to – like if he showed up as like part of the NWO or to face the NWO, it would have radically affected the WWF.
Yeah, that's interesting. What would his name have been in WCW?
They were. That's the first thing they were trying to figure out. Is he Mean Mark, or is he like the Gravedigger?
Graveyard Man.
It would probably be something like very WCW, which is like C+ WWF gimmick.
Right. Dead Man.
Hogan, of course.
He'd be just called the Dead Man.
Right, just the Dead Man. Yeah.
No.
Dead Man Mark.
Mark loses all the credibility.
It really does. We're just used to it now with the documentary series.
I guess. But, like, Mark is not a tough guy name.
No.
Hey, Mark.
And it's the worst name for a wrestler.
Who's the best?
If you're, like, in the smart mark. If you're in the smart Mark Internet and your guy is a Mark, then it's kind of like...
Who's the best Mark wrestler ever? Is it Mark Morrow?
Well, he's better than Mark Jindrak, that's for sure.
Right. Mark Jindrak. I can't even think of any other Marks.
Like on-screen Marks?
Yeah, I mean, obviously The Undertaker is the best Mark. But like,
yeah, he's the best Mark. Who was the WCW guy? Who was the fat hotline guy?
Mark Madden?
Yep, that was a pretty bad Mark.
Yeah, but he's not really a wrestler. He's just some guy they put on commentary.
No, yeah. He's the only guy that Mean Gene Okerlund that I can remember got physical with. Of all the people and all the years that Mean Gene Okerlund was on screen, never getting physical with anybody, it gets wasted on Mark Madden.
On one of the early TNA shows, the commentary is TNA, Ed Ferrara, and Don West. And one of them says something fucking mean about Mark Madden, and they all pile on him. But he's not on the show. Like he's clearly just this hated guy that, like... Like, I think it's Ferrara makes an offhand remark, and TNA, the nicest guy in the world, is like, yeah.
Like, oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. It's really funny. It's so out of nowhere.
Surprise me.
There's no context either. It's like it's something else going on. Oh, it looks like Mark Madden's wife or something, and they all laugh.
What? And so who's the champion at this point where you're up to?
Oh, it's still Shamrock.
And which what podcast are you covering that in?
It's called TNA Never Dies. Right, okay. Here and on so, the North South Connection Podcast Network.
And is it, are you like in June of 2002 or
I think we're in July now. We've done, I think only, I'm all messed up with the schedule. Either the fourth, we've recorded four by this point, the first four. The fourth one hasn't dropped yet, but it might by the time this plays. And
I don't remember Shamrock dropping the title. Speaking of dropping, who does he drop the title to? Does he drop it to anybody?
I think it's R-Truth. Okay. K-Crush.
K-Crush, right.
Yeah, but Sabu just won a number one contenders match in the episode I'm watching, so...
Oh, gosh.
Hey, he actually had it was a good match that he had with Malice.
Who was Malice?
The Wall. Remember The Wall in WCW?
That was The Wall? Oh, okay.
Yeah, but Malice, he's all tatted up like a white supremacist. Like, it's really not a great look for him.
Okay.
He's got, like... He's got
that
the leg...
Not past today.
No. He's got the leg tattoos.
Oh, the Extreme era.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know who's awesome in those shows is K-Crush, R-Truth. He's amazing.
Okay. I think you were mentioning
that. His promo is so good. And I was actually watching last night, and I was thinking, like, I probably really get over right now.
Well, aren't they – that's what they were talking about on this Beyond Ringside show, was that it looked like he was going to turn on Drew McIntyre and join Bobby Lashley and MVP.
He can really talk. I know
he can, eh? Yeah.
I know we don't get it because it's just him screaming "What's up?" at the audience, but like.
No, the whole conspiracy theory angle is great.
Oh, awesome too. But again, that's comedy. Like, and he's good at it, which is great. He's one of the rare guys who's good at comedy.
Yeah.
Because they try to force so much comedy on us, but he's actually quite good at it. But on the flip side, when he's serious, he's amazing.
Scary.
Yeah, he's legitimately scary.
Yeah.
Like, like I said, I think that would be a really interesting angle in our current climate with him, like, being – talking about being held down, being made a joke.
That whole – if they did a stable, like, they were talking about, like, a new nation of domination.
Right.
That would be perfect for the – like, people would shit all over it. Of course, you'd offend a lot of people, blah, blah, blah. But that would actually be a good – way to go right now, because that applies to Lashley too. It applies to MVP.
Yeah, I think if they were to push them, they'd be fine. If they make that
stable, you have to push them. Yeah,
but if you make that stable, make them all serious, and then they do nothing like the actual Nation of Domination, you're back at square one.
Yeah, exactly. When did the Nation really stop doing stuff? Because I felt like they hit their peak in June of '97 when they nailed the Undertaker and Kama came back and pinned him. But then I felt like it was just downhill from there.
Really, because you get into 98 and you have The Rock leading the Nation.
Okay, yeah, so the reboot, right? Yeah. It takes the reboot.
Yeah, and that's good, and I think that lasts until basically The Rock kind of, like, you know, when they kind of like fake face turn him before Survivor Series 98.
Yeah, That was it.
He fights Mark Henry at the pay-per-view before and loses, too. He gets pinned by Mark
Henry. Yeah. That was shocking, yeah. I remember when Ahmed Johnson left, like, they never really explained it, but it was just Vince McMahon saying, Ahmed Johnson has left the Nation of Domination for philosophical reasons. I just picture the argument backstage.
Man, that's not how a black man is motivated. Yeah, it was just, you're not my kind of guy.
You're just, yeah, and because the original angle was Farooq didn't like Ahmed because he was black, which I never understood. I didn't understand the angle going in.
It didn't make any sense.
No. Yeah, we remember those famous promos. But
yeah.
So I guess 2.0, that's where it reboots, and The Rock is facing Austin after Survivor Series. That's where they take prominence again.
No, they don't. They don't show up again.
No. Oh, sorry. Rock Austin was 97. I mean,
for the Intercontinental. There. And then you have which I thought was a good angle. You have kind of that leadership struggle between Rock and Farooq.
Which I totally thought was going to a Farooq Rock match at WrestleMania, but that's how little I knew as a wrestling fan.
Idiot. Stupid idiot.
Yeah, but you would think that you would get a payoff for that, but you only got that in May in Judgment Day?
Over the Edge.
Right.
Where
he pins him to this.
Yeah, but he pile drives him earlier in the show. He pile drives the shit out of him on the ramp. And then Rock.
And they do a stretcher job.
Yeah, and then they're like, they drag him out later and Rock cheats to win.
Right.
Did Rock win a match clean from like December 97 to?
Well, I mean, the best one was the Royal Rumble win. He won by getting pinned. Like, that was the best.
I love that angle where he's got the brass knuckles and he puts it in Shamrock's pants.
It was just, I'd never seen it. I was angry because at the time I hated The Rock. I really liked Shamrock because he was legit. And I was like really lamenting at the time. I wasn't down with the Attitude Era as it was progressing. I was lamenting like wrestling. The wrestling aspect going away, so I really wanted Shamrock to win.
You were lamenting that at your age?
Yeah, Amalia. Yeah, well, because my dad is a big traditionalist, right? So that was my influence. That and the PWI mags, right?
Right.
So I was a work rate freak. So I was thinking, if Shamrock can win, then maybe they'll push more wrestling.
Nope.
He pins him in 6 minutes, and I'm like, he crushed him. Clean. Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah.
And then there was just this like nagging feeling of like, oh wait, doesn't he still have the brass knucks in his tights? Like, you should get out of the ring, bro.
Yeah, run.
All downhill from there.
And it's like the only thing I don't like about that is you get the inconsistency of that's the time the referee enforces the rules. Because there's so many other times someone comes down and is like, he killed him with a chair. Well, I didn't see it.
Right. Yes. Yes. It's usually at the Rumble because remember at Rumble 96. Triple H pinned Duke the Dumpster Drosy to get the number 30 spot in the Royal Rumble, and they used an instant replay rule there where Gorilla Monsoon came out.
Who were they making? Were they making fun of the NFL or something with the instant replay rule?
That was in 91, in 96 it must have been that. It must have been something about we are instituting an instant replay rule.
Because we're better than the NFL.
Yeah, exactly. They're always attacking some sport. In 94, it was the strike with baseball.
It's such a strange attitude they have with like how they're adversarial with everything.
Like, yes.
Can you imagine a sitcom? You imagine Seinfeld, like, the last 2 minutes shitting on Friends?
Not even Friends.
Yeah.
Not even Friends. Like, shitting on horse racing.
Yeah, don't watch horse
racing. That horse isn't even funny! Just nothing like, all right, well, I wasn't planning on watching horse racing until you mentioned it a second ago. And then there was like, I mean, in 2002. Yeah. Remember Bischoff's Raw was like constantly attacking Monday Night Football. You're watching football. Well, we've got hot lesbian action. Like, what? Like, why? That's going to make them like, if you're following a football team on a Monday night, you're not switching the channel for anything.
No. And like, if you're really into hot lesbian action, you can find it on the internet. You don't need to tune in.
You can find it anywhere at that point, especially in 2002. If this were 98, I'd be okay. All right, well, I guess. But yeah, exactly. It's 2002.
It's everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, wow. Boy, this fall of 2002 on Raw was awful.
I just recorded a podcast that I will drop next week from when this records, where I talked about 2003. 2003 is really bad, Raw.
really bad.
That's the really bad Raw year. 2002 is okay. It's not great near the end. But
I'm talking about the fall specifically because we have Katie Vick right after the hot lesbian act.
Honestly, it's the same. It's the same problem, right? It's exactly the same problem. End of 2002 and 2003. A lot of H's.
Which is, yeah, exactly.
A lot of H's.
Him just running down and ruining every contender.
Well, and what was really interesting...
It's an impressive run. It's impressive of how many people he ruins.
He just destroys. But let's not get into that too much because
sure.
There's a show next week.
We should do a whole episode. Yeah.
We will. Let's do it in like two or three.
Okay.
Because like I just...
Yeah, episodes? Yeah, there's just there's such a long kill list. He's got who has the longer kill list, him or Hillary? Which H has the bigger kill list? Yeah. Hunter Hearst Helmsley or Hunter Hearst Killery?
Hunter Rodham Clinton.
Yeah, yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Same initials.
Pretty much. Yeah. Yep. So, So you did a podcast on that. Which podcast is that?
It's the year that was, where I'm talking about the pay-per-view years. And 2003, okay. I won't spoil it, but one of the major themes of the whole year is like SmackDown's amazing and Raw is the worst ever.
I remember them. I remember saying, like, why don't they just come out and brand one? Why don't they just brand SmackDown as the best wrestling is on SmackDown, and then Raw make it all the stars are on Raw?
That is kind of what it is, except a bunch of the stars are on SmackDown.
True. Well, you got your SmackDown 6, and then you got Taker and Brock.
Yeah, but the SmackDown, like, SmackDown in 03 is really dominated by Angle Brock. And then underneath is Benoit Guerrero. And then a few others. Mysterio's there. Tajiri's there. Edge is out, isn't he? Yeah, he's hurt.
He's hurt. He misses 19 and 20.
Yeah. So
we forgot that part about Edge, about how he's susceptible to injuries. when he goes down with a tricep, I was like, oh, yeah, he's only missed the last 10 years because of one.
His neck is broken. Did you watch that match? Did you watch the greatest match of all time?
I did.
How was it? I didn't see it.
It was fine. I mean, honestly, it wasn't going to live up to its hype. I like the beginning of the match because it was very much like a Bret Hart beginning of a match, which we haven't seen in a while. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of cool.
Was it Orton that was doing more of it, or was it Edge?
Both. But here's the problem I had with it. I've never seen Edge wrestle like that. So why is he wrestling like that now? So I already had a problem with that.
Right.
I've never seen him wrestle like that. Like, well, just like, well, why are we breaking out wrist locks and headlocks and crisscrossing? Why are we doing that now? It was entertaining. It was fine. But, like, it didn't deserve the billing. The problem I had towards the, like, four-fifths of the way in, they're just using everybody's finishing move.
Oh, okay.
So Orton uses the angle slam, and Edge hits him with a rock bottom, and then there was Eddie Guerrero. They started with the Eddie Guerrero three suplexes. They both did it.
Did they point to the sky?
Randy Orton did.
Did he really?
He really did.
At least he didn't point to the ground like when he said he was going to be in hell.
Yeah, exactly. At least he did. At least he doesn't. So, but it is a callback. But like, there's no reason. It's just like, oh crap, we got to fill 10 minutes. What do we do?
I feel like
I
feel like I'd like it more if he pointed to the ground. Like, I know it's
here's the other thing. Like, Orton is the best performer in the WWE. Now, and I'm not saying that because there's nobody else on the roster at the moment.
No, he's great.
He, in this match, I'm watching, I'm like, oh, he's a superstar.
Yeah.
In this match, because I haven't been watching the product that much because they don't deserve me to watch. They haven't earned my,
time.
But Orton, he's a superstar. He is a superstar. He is the total package, the literal total package. He's incredible in this match.
I've been on the Orton train for a while, like at least 4 or 5 years. I'm like, wow, he's really good. But you know what really hit me was last year. I think it might have been SummerSlam last year. So Kofi wins the belt at 35, right? And he's feuding with Dolph Ziggler. He's feuding with Kevin Owens, and it looks fine. But then he feuds with Orton, and like he looks completely outclassed superstar level wise. Like Orton looks like a legit world champion. And I don't think it's just a look thing. I think it's how he carries himself.
It's how he carries him. But those looks that he gives.
Oh yeah.
How he plays. He's not just wrestling well. He's playing to the camera in a way where he doesn't look like he's playing to the camera. He's just in character, but he's playing to the camera really well.
It's funny how he's a guy that, I mean, I don't know about you, but he's a guy I really didn't like for a long time. And then when I really started rewatching stuff, I was like, oh, I kind of get it. Like, I get how all the legends are like, Randy Orton's the best. I get it. Like, I really appreciate his – and just how – he's still so smooth. The way he just – the way he look, moves. Go on.
The last part of that match is fantastic. I will say that, and it's all Orton. I give it all to Orton. He's so smooth. The finishing sequence where you know you go in and it's about hitting the move or not hitting the move, and it was really great. It had a slight Japan feel to it. Yeah.
Well, I think you probably have to give the. I mean, I'm sure Edge carried his weight, right? But like you probably have to lay most of the match on Orton's shoulders because Edge hasn't wrestled a singles match in 10 years.
No, exactly.
Like he was in the Royal Rumble, which is fine. The WrestleMania thing was clearly taped in a bunch of sequences, right? So it's not the same when you're editing it together.
Well, I mean, and this was too apparently because he got injured on some retakes.
Oh, okay.
You know what I'm saying? So, and there is a slight cinematic I won't describe it because it's not. I mean, there's some charming moments. And you'll see it. I won't spoil that part for you.
Sure.
But it wasn't necessary for the match for them to do it. But it was very good camera work that did help some moves. But some of them was like, okay, the cameraman is clearly in the ring and getting close-ups of them. So it was like, all right, I didn't really need that as much. But other than that, it was good camera work. And that's I don't know if I can describe it better than that.
I feel like I have trouble getting revved up for like a 40-minute match now, though, even if it's really good.
Yeah, well, if you know it's going to be 40 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, it's the same. It's kind of the thing we were talking about like on the last episode about the first Iron Man match with Bret and Michaels.
Right.
You knew nothing's going to happen in the first while.
Well, it's like even when I have to rewatch something. Like, I mean, I really – at least on some of them – like the whole Gargano Adam Cole series from last year, I saw the first one live at NXT New York, and that, I really liked it live. And then they kind of got progressively like longer as the feud went on. And when I went back to rewatch 2019, they were actually the thing I was dreading doing the most, which shouldn't be it because the matches are at the very least they're good, right? Like depending on what your mileage may vary on them, obviously, but at the very least they're good. So I there's something about these. I feel like NXT has really burned me out on long matches.
Yeah, because it must come a bit predictable for you because there's these guys going and no one's getting pinned for at least 20 minutes. So.
Well, and I think they've really broken the system there in terms of like the spam finishes, right?
It's funny. It's like the stock market in a way. It's like it's overblown at this point. You have to bring it back.
Right.
And in 2003, here's another point that they were doing in 2003. Yeah, were they calling it the quote-unquote the new style, I think, at the time? It was at the end of 03?
Yeah, it's when they're taking away the high-flying stuff, right?
Was it the high-flying stuff? Yeah, there was a lot of high-flying stuff. They took away a lot of no more referee shoving, and there was a few other changes, but they were bringing it back to no more hardcore matches. They were trying to... They'd let the toothpaste out of the bottle, so they were trying to bring it back a bit. So for a while, it was like, ugh.
Right.
And that's what's going to have to happen if they don't dial it back on their own and do some surprise finishes that are quick.
Yeah.
Then they're going to have to dial it back slower, and it's not going to be as fun.
I've been advocating for that forever, for some surprise finishes. Because otherwise, what's the point of doing a roll-up? It never works, ever.
Like, well, you were saying that matches should end without the finishers.
Yes, sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they should finish before they even get to the sequences.
Yeah, because I don't want to be mentally in my head being like, okay, well, they haven't done this yet. That means this isn't going to be the pin.
Exactly. Like, yeah. So who's the first guy to kick out of the F5?
Cena?
And when would have that been?
Did he kick out of it at SummerSlam 2014?
I believe he did. Yeah, there must have been like three of them spread out over.
But you know what? He hit him with it. It was the first move of the match.
That's right. No, Taker took the third F5 from.
Oh yeah.
He was pinned on the third. Yeah. So it has to be before that. Because I mean, there's a time where Lesnar would hit that; it's game over.
Yeah.
And now he has to hit five of them, six of them.
Well, and then they tried to kind of fix that last year, where like he's beating Braun Strowman with one of them. Was it last year or maybe the year before? I don't remember. Whenever
was it 27? Yes, yes.
It was when what's his name? Someone had to give up the belt when Reigns won the title, and then when he had to give it up for cancer. So it was late 2018. That's when Lesnar started beating guys again with just one F5. Like he also beat Samoa Joe the year. Like it's weird how they spread it out. Some guys only get one. Some guys get to kick out of 10.
Yeah. Yeah, because you can see the hierarchy within the matches of like who they prefer and who they don't instead of just the match itself.
Right. So fucking stupid. Speaking of Brock Lesnar, speaking of him, I think there's...
Look at that transition.
You love that? You love that?
I loved it. Because I wasn't expecting it. How did we get there? That was impressive.
It wasn't even on purpose, but I figure we need to have some...
It wasn't. No, that's what I'm saying. It wasn't on purpose.
Some
it wasn't,
semblance no. of structure. It's a semblance, though. It's just a semblance. I think there's a case to be made that Brock Lesnar is the greatest professional wrestler of all time.
Ooh.
Not with – obviously, I don't think he has the catalog, right? You can't put him – he's getting the catalog. But I think if you took one performance, a snapshot of one performance, he might be the very best person at professional wrestling at his peak. I think he does –
And what is your criteria? What's your – what are we throwing in here?
Well, I think he's really great in ring. I think his moves look good and crisp. I think he's a really underrated seller. Nobody talks about his selling, but his selling is really cool. Like
I love the selling.
Yeah, he looks like he's getting beat up for real, and maybe he is. Maybe they're potatoing each other
and surprised. But a lot of times he'll look like surprised or stunned.
Yeah, like he'll sell like
as he's staggering a bit.
Yeah, he'll sell the moment of what's going on. You know, like when he fought Goldberg. That first time at Survivor Series 16, and he got speared, and you could see like he's like, oh no, I'm fucked. Like, I'm fucked now because I got speared out of nowhere, and like it was just a great little moment. I think but he's great in ring. I think he's a really interesting character. Like, I don't think he needs to talk ever. It's fine the way it is. But what I think he does, like we're just talking about Orton, he does all those little things just as well. The looks, the way he kind of like slows things down when he's like ready to take his gloves off and like crack your head open, like the the little asides where he laughs at you or he plays to the crowd just a little bit, like he'll start kind of jumping up and down. That time where he laughed at the Undertaker and he made the Undertaker laugh back, like he's just so good at every aspect of it, and he's legitimate.
There's something that he. And well, he's legitimate.
He's legitimate, which also helps. And the last, I mean, we're going to extrapolate on all of it, but I'd also put forth that, like, he brings a quality to the – he brings a special quality to the matches that I don't think anybody else ever has.
Well, that's the point I want to build on because he – yeah, sorry, go ahead.
No, go on, go on.
He – every – what I notice is every match that he starts, that the beginning of every match he's in is different.
Yeah.
It's different every match. And that really started – the first time that started for me was the first Cena match.
Yeah.
The bell rings and Cena is bloody and the crowd is quiet. Yeah. And we're like, what's going on? What is he going to kill this person?
Yeah.
And it goes to SummerSlam 2014. Starts the match off with an F5.
I would even say I would even throw in Royal Rumble 14. I know it's not a great match. But, like, it's against Big Show, and he just starts by fucking beating the shit out of him with a chair before the bell.
He does that. How did he start the Daniel Bryan match? He's killing him for 10 straight minutes or something, right?
Yeah.
He's killing him, and Daniel Bryan only makes a comeback at the end, and it's believable. But he's murdering him.
Yeah.
That's what I love. Nobody else does that, where the beginning of the match sets a tone for, is this going to end right now? Right. Or is he really going to hurt him? Or what kind of match? We don't know where we're in, and you're zoned into the match, unlike any other performer.
Yeah, and you don't get that. No other wrestler could give you that feeling. Like, Stone Cold Steve Austin didn't give you the feeling he's going to kill someone in a minute. right?
No.
Shawn Michaels either. You're not thinking, oh my God, HBK is gonna kill this guy, you know? With Lesnar, you do, and it's not just. I think he fell into a pattern for a little while after the Cena match, where he was doing a lot of the suplexes. But I think as long as he was fighting somebody the audience legitimately hated, it worked extremely well because it was this amazing catharsis. It was like, oh, finally. Finally Cena's getting this, right? Like, finally
Roman Reigns is getting pounded.
Yeah. But even there, his selling is so good that when that flurry comes, like, it's suddenly believable. And it doesn't matter the size of the guy. Like, you're talking about Daniel Bryan before. That flurry and comeback only works because Brock Lesnar is so good at selling. That flurry doesn't probably work against the Big Show. You know, I'm not trying to shit on the Big Show. He's fine, you know? But he doesn't sell the way Brock Lesnar sells. Brock Lesnar will sell a kick like, oh my God, he's almost knocked out. And he knows what it's like to be knocked out, so he knows how to kind of transmit that to the audience.
I guess that's a good point. The UFC background, where he knows what a sell is, so he's playing on that UFC background.
Yeah, well, all the UFC guys, like, they're all pretty. Like, Shamrock was a pretty good seller, even in TNA. He's pretty good. Rousey's not bad either. I mean, for the time she's been in the business, but Lesnar's just got it down.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that's because he went to wrestling first, so he kind of learned a little bit, like, the performative aspects of it, then went away to get beat up for real, and then put it together.
To get beat up for real.
Yeah, right.
After that Minnesota Viking locker room where they, like, gang piled him or something like that, and
right.
They all pinned him. They all took turns pinning him or something.
Yeah, he must have allowed that to happen.
Oh yeah, I'm sure.
There's
I'm sure
no way, he legitimately, like, might be the guy you don't want to fight the most in the world. Maybe not now, but there was a period.
Maybe not now, but definitely he's definitely the most legit guy in the company.
Yeah, and he's been that. You could argue since he started. Like, the only
company... he's the guy where it's like, I have no problem if he's gonna wrestle a small guy because he's gonna make the match good. He's gonna make an AJ match believable. And he's gonna make a Daniel Bryan match believable. Even the Rey Mysterio. I mean, it was 2-on-1 basically. You know, like it was. But he gives you that split second of doubt. Like, oh, you could lose this thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And
he comes in and he's destroying everybody, which was a great 5-month push where he's just up into the Rock. He's just. I mean, up into the Big Show, but really up into the Rock. It's just quick in, destroy, go home.
Yeah, and it's not against nobody's. He destroys Hulk Hogan.
Yep.
I mean, I know it's Hulk Hogan in 2002, but, like, he puts him in a bear hug until he passes out.
Yes, that he did.
Like, I don't think I've ever seen Hogan in a bear hug where he doesn't, like, let the arm drop twice and then point his finger, like, and do all his looking at the sky and shaking. Like, I've never seen that happen before, ever.
Yeah, that was would you rebook Survivor Series 02 and not have him lose to the Big Show?
Well, I mean, if you remember, he lost to the Big Show because the Big Show hurt him, right?
Right, and remember, the Big Show was, like, at that point didn't have any credibility at
no,
that particular time.
He's wearing
time.
jeans and a tank top. He's wearing jeans and a tank top. He's got that crew cut and the weird beard. I never understood why they didn't keep the Big Show's long hair when he came in. That actually looked good.
I don't understand. It looked good. They ruined him. They really ruined. They have him losing the first match.
Yeah. And they killed his dad.
Killed his dad. He's dragging. He's being dragged around by a coffin and the Big Boss Man.
He's crying backstage.
It was like, how do you – would Andre the Giant be treated that way? No.
Well, that's what they did for Andre's son. They made Andre's son go through the ringer.
They make his son go through it. But, like, so at that point, like, there's no – and, you know, he was left off of WrestleMania 18, and they'd made an angle about that. But, I mean, the most the time where they make Big Show look terrible was any time he interacts with Kevin Nash. And they did it that year.
Kevin Nash
he just treats him like he's his little brother. It was so – demeaning, and it reminded me of WCW, where it's like, oh, Kevin Nash is really just trying to make him look terrible so
right.
that he's the big guy. It was horrible. So they did it in the summer. So at that point, his credibility was completely shot. And so he wins. It feels like it's not as he went out of nowhere. And yes, he hurts him, but it's like, all right, But why him? Why am I supposed to believe him now when Lesnar's gone through everybody?
Yeah, and they take the belt off him a month later.
I understandably, it's to Kurt Angle so they can set up the whole WrestleMania 19 thing. But is that the way you would have gone about that?
No, I don't know. I think maybe you keep – I don't know if the winning the Rumble and, like, it needed to happen for Lesnar to get over. Like, he was already over. I don't think he needed that. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm judging the situation wrong. But
I'm agreeing with you. I didn't feel he needed it.
You could have had Lesnar just keep the belt to WrestleMania, right? Have Kurt Angle be the challenger and have Booker T win the Rumble.
I that would have been a better setup, I feel. Yeah. Because it's more important, because now it's that point. It's like, okay, Kurt Angle is the guy to challenge for Lesnar.
Right, and it becomes like
because it was such a foregone. Sorry, go ahead.
No, go on to finish.
Well, it's just because the match came off like a foregone conclusion.
Yeah,
I mean, it was a great match. Don't get me wrong, but like no one had any doubts that Lesnar's walking out with the title anyway.
Right.
I just think it would be a better. It's a better. You're trying to solidify Lesnar as the top guy on SmackDown at least. So, All right, I don't have a problem with that. I agree with that. But I feel it's a better story to be told that he goes through everybody to become the top guy. Then you can do a heel turn, of course, if you know, and whatever else they did later, which, you know, I wasn't as down with. But you want to establish your top guy. So then establish your top guy. He's an undefeated top guy.
And Angle should be the legitimizer for him because they both come from the wrestling background.
Exactly.
Like
you beat all these other guys, but you didn't beat the Olympic gold medalist. Writes itself pretty much.
Yeah, and then that's kind. Well, no, they can't do that feud after because he's already beat him by the time they become friends and whatnot. I don't think they should be friends going in. I think Angle should clearly be the heel, trying to like put or even if they're kind of like both presented as kind of tweeners, like. But I think that's.
I like Lesnar's a tweener better at that point. Yeah. I really didn't like him as a baby.
No, because it doesn't fit. He's not that he's not okay at it. Like, I mean, he's way better as a heel. He's a legitimate monster.
He is.
Like the story.
I liked him getting cheered in New York. I had no problem with that. But that's just because he was just legit over.
Yeah. And well, he got cheered against The Rock also. But again, it's just because he's over.
Yeah.
Like Rock is the really good big win, but. Angle is the legitimacy match, but I don't know if that legitimacy match means as much when Lesnar's already lost to the Big Show.
It didn't mean as much because he had lost to the Big Show, and I just felt like okay, like I was seeing Lesnar. That was the first time we had seen Lesnar toss Big Show around.
Yeah,
and I don't remember if you felt that way, but at the time I was like this. I was marking out, and I wasn't a mark at that point. You know, I'd been watching for 15 years at that point, so I was popping for that because I'd never seen Big Show toss like that. I wasn't just talking about the F5. There was the belly to bellies.
Yeah.
There was like I think he hits him with a German or something. He hits him with like what's the – not a Tazplex but a Uranagi or something like that.
He didn't it look was, injured. It
was, no, at all. And I'm okay with it being a six-minute match. Like it's fine. Like it just didn't – it rung as false. Like
right.
No, that's a false finish. Because you've taught me over the last, I don't know, year not to remember 2001 Big Show was destroyed. Like he was tagging with Billy Gunn. Like 2001 may have been the worst year for the Big Show ever.
Right.
2002 wasn't much better. So now suddenly I'm supposed to believe that you're taking out the legit next big thing. I like the idea that he was undefeated. He's getting over super big as the undefeated guy. Just keep going with that.
Yeah. And look, if your writing is good enough too. Let's say he's injured 2 months. You could get by 2 months without a champion. As long as you have...
But who are we talking about?
Well, the story... say SmackDown, right? Like, if you have a consistent undercard that's well-written, if your world champion is off for 2 months because he's injured, it's not a big deal.
Was he legit injured?
Well, isn't that what happened? Didn't Big Show legit injure him, and that's why they switched the title to Big Show?
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah.
Or maybe I forgot.
Yeah.
So that wasn't the original plan then.
I don't know what the original plan was.
Okay. Yeah, it's pretty irrelevant, I find. Like, and especially now in the, you know, in today's day and age, over the last 6 years, I mean, he's been champion for most of it. And
yeah,
at home,
and, so. and they don't bother to write mid-card storylines anyway. So why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you do it then?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that was kind of it's interesting because he came in and he kind of got it right away.
Yeah.
Like, everything was kind of clicking right away. I think he's way better now because he's like slowed down. But like it's kind of really a really interesting tale of two careers too, because like in from 02 to 04 he's really just a beast wrestler. Now he comes in and he's legit scary. Did you get the sense when he first came in that he was legit scary?
He was everything that when I had a fantasy league in my head and I would wrestle pillows.
Right.
I was like, if I could create one unbeatable monster, I would have him big. I'd have him built like a superhero who could move and do all the moves that a small guy could do. Like, right. It's like he's like a video game. You can build that character yourself. And if you're, you know, somebody who's, you just want to win the game and go through all the levels, you make him a 10 and everything. That's Brock.
Right.
In a video game, because he can't talk, but in all the other things, that's Brock. And I don't want to hear that guy talk. I want to see that guy. I'm going to pay money to watch that guy destroy people.
Well, it's like Goldberg.
And yeah, he totally got it right. Well, that's the thing, and it's like maybe that's why they wanted to do away with the undefeated streak thing, because they didn't want to draw the comparison to Goldberg. But I'm like, he's better than Goldberg. He should be undefeated maybe for 2 years.
Maybe forever.
I just don't see anybody beating this guy. Like, legitimately, you're really going to have to, like, kill him to, you know, and then when you have somebody build him, well, then that's a great, you know, way to elevate the other guy. But
yeah. But
don't do it cheap. Don't do it cheap. That's why I was so pissed off with the Big Show loss. Don't do it cheap, because that doesn't help anybody. It didn't help Big Show. He lost the title 3 weeks later at Armageddon.
Yeah, and it doesn't, like... I know why they do it cheap, because they want to protect the guy. But it does damage the mystique, because it didn't feel like such... You're not invested in Brock Lesnar the same way you're invested in Hulk Hogan. Whereas, like, no. Hulk Hogan gets cheated out of the belt, it feels like a real injustice. Right, no matter how he loses. This one, it feels like, like you almost see the machinations as opposed to what actually happened.
See, when I watched SummerSlam 02, I remember after, I was like, we're watching the beginning of something special. I remember saying that. We're watching the beginning of something special. When he beats The Rock, and the New York crowd goes nuts. I was in my head. I was like, "We're watching the this is like Austin '96. We're watching something special here." And then he comes back to my MSG. Now I know that later in life, okay, they don't view the MSG crowd pop as, you know, as anything to book their company around, because they view them as smarts, you know, smart internet whatevers. Okay, right. Fair. But still, there was something special going on where it's like, man, hand this guy the keys to the kingdom. He deserves it. He's legit. He's this guy he's like Vader, but built like Hogan and can flip around like Mysterio. You know what I mean? It's like,
and can wrestle like Angle.
Yeah, exactly. Just like, go. Just take this guy and go.
Yeah, and he fit.
But
the
then
role.
In 03, they're having him talk and cut these long, long, long promos that he's clearly not comfortable cutting.
Yeah, and what's also kind of interesting is he fit the mold of where they were clearly trying to angle the company. The company was kind of moving away from attitude and into ruthless aggression, right? But like the poster boys for that are like Angle and Benoit. It's all about the in-ring violence, right? This is your perfect guy for it.
Yeah. And you have a whole clash. You have a whole lineup of guys that can wrestle with this guy, especially on SmackDown that particular time. It, from top to bottom, you can have a brawl with The Undertaker, and then you can have the wrestling matches with Benoit and Angle. And a great, you know, WWE style match with Guerrero, and a very interesting mix of styles with Mysterio.
Yeah.
You can do all that and just keep everybody entertained. But then, you know, it's like, okay, well, why is he wrestling Hardcore Holly? You know, I don't want to see that. I remember at the time going, this is a waste of a pay-per-view match.
It's just because they don't want to – they're so stupid. But, like, it's like they go past guys. Like, you could bring someone back to challenge that hasn't challenged before. In that exact same spot, right? Like
who
someone,
are you thinking?
Oh God, I don't know. You could bring back the Big Show and have him beat the Big Show there again. You know, like, or, you know, anybody yeah. like that, where instead of someone. But then again, I will say, the flip side of me is I do like interesting, weird challenges. Do you think we look at the Hardcore Holly one as kind of egregious because he wasn't there that long after? And so, like, we look at his resume as limited, whereas, like, if he had a 10-year resume, it might be like, oh, it's cool he fought Holly at this one pay-per-view.
I think that it didn't click for me because we were never conveyed as audience members who they knew Hardcore Holly to be backstage.
Right.
So if the Hardcore Holly who's backstage and who's, like, a badass and a bully and, like, he's, like, stiff in the ring – if that was portrayed over the last 6 months, you just do that for 6 months. Okay. Now I'm more like, okay, I could buy this. But he was never portrayed as that. He was a joke in the first 4 years of his career. Then he's the hardcore guy.
You didn't enjoy the NASCAR driver?
I preferred him as Thurman. The Thurman got to me. Thurman was good. Thurman was good. I really was looking forward. I really enjoyed his series with Quang. It really got those. It really warmed up the crowds while Todd Pettengill was telling us to buy the pay-per-view. I remember every Bob Holly match on pay-per-view in 94 always had a clock above it and time was ticking because it was on the pregame show.
And that's someone, what I remember. Someone was gesturing him from the outside of the ring like to wrap it up.
To wrap it up, and I remember trying to look over Todd Pettengill's shoulder, like move. I want to see what's going on in the ring. Like, and there's a pinfall, but like, and Howard Finkel's muted. It's like, I'm like, what happened? Who won the match? And then Pettengill would look over and goes, oh, they're having a wrestling match. I'm like, I know.
Can I please watch it?
I know. I'm like, I'm ready to watch this. I've ordered the show. Yeah. I've ordered the show. Show the show. So I mean, that was it. But they. There was no credit. What did Bob? I stopped at the hardcore stuff because I don't remember what Hardcore Holly did in between that time, and then he's challenging Brock Lesnar for the championship.
Well, he got his neck broken, so there's that.
Okay.
Because that was the storyline for the match. That was actually the storyline for the match. That Brock broke his neck, and then he's coming back now for vengeance.
Right. Right. But then what? And that happens in, I guess what, the spring of 03, the break? Because it was Royal Rumble 94 that they had the match, and he's out from when? Like the end of 02 or beginning of 03 or something?
It's around then. But let me ask you this. What guy comes back from injury and is immediately given a world championship match as a reward?
I have no idea. That's the other thing. And it's like, wait, hang on a second. When did Bob Holly ever have a world championship match before that?
Did he ever fight Bret Hart on like an episode of Raw when Bret was the fighting champion?
He doesn't get it during Michaels. He doesn't get Michaels because he's a. I guess they weren't doing the face stuff because I could see that, you know, being on a 96 Raw.
I wish he would have fought Sid. Sid would have fucking injured him.
Sid would have power bombed him back to Tennessee. Well, they were buddies, so there's that. No, doesn't the Taker never gives him a shot? Austin. Probably never gives him a shot.
No, nope. like Undertaker's granting title shots.
Yeah, exactly. You deserve one, Thurman.
Didn't they call him Thurman backstage?
I would have loved that if he calls him Thurman backstage. I don't remember anybody. Did The Rock ever give him anything? Maybe
no.
Triple H gave him a shot or something in the 99-2000. I don't.
Maybe he got something on like a one-off Raw or SmackDown.
Yeah, I could see it like they, you know, him and Crash Holly challenged like The Rock and Kane in a, you know, whatever. But like that was, you know, something like that. But no, I don't remember him ever getting a world championship match. But now I'm supposed to buy him as a contender against the most dangerous and believable. Well, monster that they've put out.
Look, you want to give him a title shot when he's at his least over, obviously.
You cut out. Did you say you don't want to give him a title shot when he's at his least over?
That's when you want to do it, right when he's at his least over. Not when he's hardcore, not when he's anything, just when he just comes back.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, exactly. Yes. When I don't even know what the angle was because it was legit and not a storyline.
Yeah.
I'm supposed to care about this guy now. It was clearly an accident. Like he just dragged his neck a bit.
But it's like for all the you just mentioned before how they don't take the New York crowd seriously because they're smart marks. But this is a storyline exactly for them. Mm, like if you're not on the internet, you don't know what's happening.
No, it's just, why is he getting a title shot? Is it a hardcore match? No, no, it's just a wrestling match. Okay. All right. It's for the title? Yes. It, you mean on the second biggest, most important pay-per-view of the year? Of course, pal. Like, what? Why? Why? It didn't make any sense, especially when you're on SmackDown at that point. SmackDown was still loaded.
SmackDown is full of talent. Absolutely.
This is before the draft. The draft is still in April. That's the first draft. I remember that.
It's still he goes 7 minutes with Lesnar also. Like, that's too long for Hardcore Holly.
So there was
Holly.
No point. It's too long for Hardcore Holly. But again, why are you having a championship match if you're only going to go? Yeah, it defied all kinds of law. Especially because I remember this, the Survivor Series right before it, it was Lesnar and just anybody who was big in size. Right. You had like Matt Morgan, Nathan Jones, Albert, Nathan. And I think Nathan Jones. The Big Show, I think.
Yeah.
And the whole match was sold on like Lesnar talking to them every week for 10 minutes. I remember that. I was like, why is this happening?
What, was he giving them speeches backstage?
Yes, on SmackDown, because you didn't get SmackDown at that point. I remember that. We got SmackDown because we got the American channels for some reason. We got all the pay-per-views that year for some reason. And so I remember every week, like, I'm sitting there going, why am I not watching him wrestle? Why am I watching him say ruthless aggression with that long pause in between the two words? I don't want to hear this.
Ruthless aggression.
But not that deep of a voice, because he doesn't have that deep. So it ruthless aggression.
What, does he run a pharmacy? Like, yeah. What are you basing his voice on?
I can almost hear like Sable off the camera, like coaching him. That was good, son.
I have your marzipan over here, sir. It's Kurt Angle, Bradshaw, Benoit, Hardcore Holly, and John Cena against Brock, A-Train, Big Show, Nathan, and Matt Morgan.
13, yeah, and then
13 minutes.
Go ahead.
13 minutes. That's not a lot of time for a Survivor Series match.
No, and there was only one other Survivor Series match on the card, too, that night.
Yeah, and Benoit pins him.
Does he tap him out?
He taps him out.
Taps him out, yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah, so I was like, well.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it's totally crazy.
He taps out twice in 2003. I can't imagine him tapping out now. But, like, he taps out to Angle and he taps out to Benoit.
That's right. But this was before he was a UFC guy.
Right.
So it's not as like crazy to believe at that particular time.
No, but even then, like, I don't know. I feel like he could just power out of anything.
Yeah, but I mean, in that Survivor Series match, he was attacked by Hardcore Holly at the beginning of the match.
Right.
And then they drag him back or something like that, right?
Yeah, in 11.
Hardcore Holly was disqualified like right out of the gate, I believe. And then, yeah. So,
and it's such a forgotten Survivor Series match, even on that show, because the other one is like Bischoff against Austin with the Michaels performance.
Right. And Randy Orton with his second of 10 Survivor Series wins.
Yeah, it's cool that that's his thing. That he wins in Survivor Series.
All the time.
Yeah. So I think his first run is Lesnar, anyway, is really, really strong. Like,
it's really strong, but I remember by the end of it, he's been pinned by 5 people, because I used to keep statistics on that.
Right. Well, who pinned him? Big Show.
So you got Big Show, you got Guerrero, Angle, Goldberg, and Taker pinned him once on a SmackDown.
Right.
The triple threat number one contender.
Did you believe Guerrero beating him?
No, I had a problem with it.
I struggle with it too, and it's kind of lauded as one of these like all-time great matches and all-time great moments, and it's cool that Guerrero won the championship, but it made no sense.
No.
Like, even with...
You needed a 2 interferences from Goldberg to do it.
Yeah. Like, it's like Guerrero lasted way too long with Lesnar. Was my problem with it a lot. Like, he was in there too long before the interference started.
Yeah. Yeah, because Guerrero at this point, it's his first championship match.
Yeah.
I mean, not his first championship match, but it's his first championship win. I guess his only championship win. Yeah, but so he had spent a lot of 2003 with Chavo, and then there was the U.S. title run.
Well, the Chavo comes after, because the U.S. title run comes first, and then he fights Chavo at the 2004 Rumble.
No, oh, sorry.
Oh,
didn't
yeah.
mean the
Oh, you
feud.
mean the feud? Yes. You're right. And then once the tournament happens, once the tournament happens, he completely breaks out, and becomes
right.
like the most over guy on the roster, basically.
Right. And that's one of those things where it's like, okay, this is the world of professional wrestling.
Right.
Because I can't buy that win from Guerrero. I understand that they're trying to set something up. I really look, retrospect, I mean, they had to get the title off of Brock. I understand. I get it. I'm perfectly fine with an Angle Guerrero match with no championship on the line. You just write a storyline for it, you know. Maybe that's the point that they didn't want to do.
Maybe. I mean, how long do you think that match was? Do you remember?
With Guerrero? It was a long match. I remember that. It was a very long match.
30 minutes.
Is it 30? I would have said 24, 25, but yeah.
Yeah, he lasts 30 minutes. And Goldberg only interferes at the end, right?
Oh, well, he had a... here's the thing, though. Remember, there was a promo cut earlier in the night, and Goldberg had speared him already.
Right. Ah, I don't buy it's enough. I don't buy it's enough for Guerrero to still be able to hang with him.
No. No. Because you have built him up to this level, right? You can't... You want to make him... he has to have a flaw, obviously, so that you can have somebody beat him.
Right.
You can't have him be God. But when that moment comes, you want it to be something more than a chair shot.
Right. And Goldberg...
Right? Just you beat everybody that way.
Is Goldberg in the audience the whole time in that match, too? Or does he just show up at the end?
I think he shows up at the end, because he's in the audience... when they cut the promo in the second match of the show.
Because, like, if he only shows up at the end of the match, that's one of those business exposing things I hate. Because it's like...
Which is what?
Well, you're only showing up when you're supposed to end the match. Right? Like, what if Lesnar had beaten Guerrero in 5 minutes?
Right.
Like, you have to... I don't remember. Like, if he's there the whole time and there's interaction the whole time, it makes sense. But if he just pops up at the end, it's stupid.
No, he was advertised as being there.
Right. But then he chose to wait till the end of the match to get involved.
No, I believe it was that he was in the audience for the beginning of the show, and then they do the in-ring interview, and he spears him the first time, and they escort him out.
Oh, okay, and then they only take... Okay, I see. And then he only gets there... Like, he only gets back at the end kind of thing.
I don't know if he only gets back at the end. I don't know if they even covered that in the writing. But I see what you're saying, and I agree with what you're saying, and it's still coincidental that he arrives at the right moment.
Right, when the match could have ended in 2 minutes, considering who's in it.
Yeah, exactly.
And I don't know if they've developed his flaws not at that point, but I think his flaw now is what we kind of touched on earlier, that he can be surprised. That, and he refuses to wear a jockstrap. Because what I don't like now is, every match is him getting kicked in the nuts.
Yeah.
Like, that's how Seth Rollins beat him at WrestleMania. That's how he beat him at SummerSlam. That's how he got eliminated from the Rumble.
Does he beat him at SummerSlam with that? It wasn't clean? They protected him?
I think he gets kicked in the nuts. It happens at least one other time. But I know what happens at the Royal Rumble, too. Like, before Drew McIntyre claymores him out, he gets kicked in the nuts. I think by Ricochet. Like, come on,
that's
dude.
Right.
Start. Rey Mysterio kicks him in the nuts a bunch in the Survivor Series match also.
Oh, does he?
Yeah,
okay.
Like, start wearing a cup.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think you're an idiot, but you might want to, like, start taking some steps to protect yourself.
There's a little bit of a hole in that writing there.
Yeah, well, we'll just kick him in the nuts. That's all we can do, because we don't know what to do with a guy like him.
I guess you don't.
Oh, I mean, like, look, like, I think what I don't like, okay, is I think when they got to McIntyre and him, right, I think McIntyre looks like he could fight him.
Yeah,
he's big enough. He looks mean enough. He's tall. Like he looks like he could actually hurt Lesnar. And I don't know why they didn't just do it like a 20-minute brawl as opposed to the finisher spam that we got in the match. That's my biggest disappointment with that whole thing, is that I think they could have legitimately had a really interesting match. Like could,
with a real crowd, they probably would have, right?
Yeah, like you could have had Lesnar fighting from underneath the whole match, which might have been really interesting, because you never see that.
Right.
Like, he's really just having trouble with this guy. Maybe he has to resort to fucking hitting him in the nuts or whatever they want to do, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, just something different. How different do you think the current wrestling landscape is if Brock Lesnar doesn't disappear? and go to try and play football in 04.
If he sticks around?
Yeah.
Through that era?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, I think Batista will feel that the most.
Yeah, you think Batista goes into that role?
I think so, because you have Cena that's going to be, I think, pushed no matter what.
Right.
Because he doesn't fit the mold, but that you're going to keep Batista and Lesnar apart a lot longer. And, yeah, I don't think you're going to fill the hole that quickly. There's no JBL.
Good.
Yeah, I have no problem with that. Oh, things would no doubt be better. No doubt. Yeah. Yeah, I think we should establish that. Things are no doubt better.
Way better.
Yeah, far better. Because SmackDown was drizzling for the last 9 months of 04. And right. I mean, like, it was only good for the first 3 months of 04.
Right, and the denominator there is that it's Brock Lesnar running it, right? Like,
I guess so, yeah. Yeah, what does he do? Who's he feuding with in 04 then?
Well, I mean, he probably goes back after Guerrero. Because if he stays, he beats Goldberg, right?
Probably destroys him.
Yeah, which would be cool to see. He beats Goldberg, and then he probably goes right back after Guerrero.
And he probably takes the title by SummerSlam.
Yeah, there's no way Guerrero can withstand that. And then who's fighting Guerrero at that point? Like, that Guerrero's fighting, he fights JBL doesn't happen, I don't think. Or maybe JBL actually happens the right way. Because part of the problem with the JBL push is he's just suddenly a main eventer.
Suddenly a main eventer.
Yeah, like instead of...
It was kind of like the Hardcore Holly thing. It's like, here are these jobbers or these low mid-carders since 1996 that we've trained you not to respect. Now they're in the main event.
Yeah. Here's Jinder Mahal, a guy who was in a joke band. Now he's the WWE champion for almost a year.
It was the exact same push.
Yeah, well, Mahal was more egregious, I find, because at least...
It was far more egregious, but it was the same type of, yeah. You've told me he's not good.
Right. Well, at least Bradshaw, there were moments where they, like, were pushing him. They had never pushed Jinder Mahal ever before they came to the championship.
No, that's true. That is true. I liked the JBL at the end with the hardcore division. I liked that.
Yeah, that's where it
was
belongs.
Like a different flavor. Yeah, it was a different thing. It was like, okay, yeah, that was cool because you're stiff and, you know, you look like it. Anyway, it was cool. But yeah, I think, I guess, he takes the title back from Guerrero at SummerSlam and we don't have to sit through all those JBL Undertaker, quote unquote, main event matches.
Yeah. I think – you know what I think happened?
We would get probably Triple H and Brock at WrestleMania 21.
Yeah, and that – I don't know how well that goes for Brock.
That's interesting because now he would be rubbing up against the kill list guy.
Yeah, right. Because, I mean, like they separate them quite quickly when Lesnar wins the title from Rock, which is good.
Yep.
Yeah, because I think at that point you're probably looking at Cena running, becoming like the number one guy on SmackDown, right?
Yep.
So then maybe you move Lesnar to Raw.
You move Lesnar to Raw in like January of 05, like they moved Benoit to Raw the year before.
Or maybe just everything kind of like, maybe everything goes according to plan. And you don't have to put him with Triple H. You have him in like a blood feud at 21 instead with somebody.
With?
I don't know. Maybe you do Lesnar Michaels. I mean, I love that we got Angle Michaels, but Lesnar Michaels would have been pretty spectacular.
That would have been fantastic. We never got that match. That's true.
A shame because that's one that really could have – because Michaels is exactly the right guy to be in the match.
That would have been a perfect match. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, so like – because like maybe – I mean in kind of a perfect world – in my perfect world of WrestleMania 21, I think Triple H is the babyface challenging Orton for the belt.
Right, you have Evolution dump Triple H from the group.
Yeah, that's what makes sense to me because then it's funny because when we do our episode on Triple H, I'm sure we'll talk about how he can never let himself look vulnerable. But that's exactly when it should have happened because like you're the old guy, you're the old guy in the group, you're out.
Yeah.
And then he has to fight back and get the belt, and then the crowd will actually legitimately cheer for him instead of just the Pavlovian response that like number one, we like his music, number two, he's a big star, number three, he's probably gonna win.
He would probably get over as a face like he would have gotten over in 01 that night he came out to save The Rock from Steve Austin.
There's three times where it could have happened. In 01, this one, and when Angle was trying to cuckold him.
Oh, that's right.
He would have gotten way over with Angle trying to cuckold him if he would have let Angle cuckold him in the storyline.
Right.
Oh, God. Imagine a WWE where Kurt Angle marries Stephanie instead. Fuck, it'd be awesome.
Yeah. Mm.
I mean, maybe they'd both be dead, but, like, the company would be better.
Yeah, and Triple H would be, like, coming back once in a while. And...
yeah. Triple H will go to TNA.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Could fight Jeff Jarrett. Yeah,
they were saying that, like, it took him a while to learn to cut a good promo, Triple H. And I'm wondering when that was.
That happened?
Yeah, I guess we'll cover it in the other episode. But yeah, there was a while he couldn't cut a good promo.
It's still going on.
Yeah.
That's my point. Yeah. Is that like he just doesn't know his limits. We'll talk about Triple H. So
WrestleMania 21 with a Triple H Lesnar match is I wonder what the angle, because they definitely would have built towards that, because I do remember in the Wade Keller website, Pro Wrestling Torch, that's what I was reading at the time. So when he leaves, it was mentioned that that's what they would have built towards.
Right.
So, which makes, you know, the most amount of sense. So, and I guess that was in the Triple H, quote unquote, legitimizing people phase. So he would have put him over. He would have lost the match.
Yeah, he's not going to put him over. He'll lose the match, but not put him over.
Right.
I wonder if they've relaxed their policy of not letting stars get too big if he doesn't leave.
Well, and I would say that's a very strong point right there, because that changes – that has impacted everything to today.
Right.
That was the big kill shot. Okay, so first was The Rock, but, you know, Vince is like, oh, maybe I can profit off of this somehow, and so I'll build a movie studio, which is Vince McMahon. You know, anytime Vince McMahon says maybe I'll start it never ends well. But – so he tries that. Then he gives the company to Lesnar, and then Lesnar leaves. And that was the second blow. And I think the third and final blow, which I think we forget, but this was when the decision, I believe, was made, was when Lashley left.
Bobby Lindsay left?
Yeah, Bobby Lindsay. Yeah, yes.
When he left the promotion? Yeah.
Yes. So you're 100% right. If it's just The Rock that goes, okay. That's, you know, McMahon doesn't react horribly to it. And then if years later it's Bobby Lashley, then it's like, well, it's not nearly as big of a deal. But Lesnar, he's put so many people over. So many people have been put over for him. Yes, that changes that. We would still have legit stars today.
Right. And then maybe people would stick around more. Maybe a Punk would have stayed longer. But then again, by the time – I was going to say maybe Punk doesn't get his shot. But by the time Punk does get his shot, all these guys are getting older anyway.
Yeah, it's interesting how many stars that they had. But it's still run the same way where it's like only a couple guys are going to be on top.
Yeah.
You can have like 18 former world champions on the roster. And I'm not exaggerating. Usually they have like 18 around guys who have held the title at a certain point. And they're at any time on the roster. And a lot of them, you know, for a while, like in 2013, you would include like, you know, guys like Christian and Mark Henry and Dolph Ziggler who had like fleeting moments with the secondary world championship. But those are not top guys. Nope. Your top guys are always just a couple guys. It's still just a couple guys.
Yeah, it's really Cena, Triple H. And,
yeah. And whoever else they're letting in. But so it's interesting. Yeah. I don't know what happens with Punk at that particular point. But it's a better company at that particular point if Lesnar is still around.
Right, and maybe they let if he does kind of catch fire the way he did, they let him kind of branch out like they should have. Because if you remember, when Punk kind of first got – when he really got hot in that summer of 11, like he was getting offers to be on shows, to do this, to do that, and they shut it down. They said, nope, we're not –
oh, letting, did they?
Yeah. And it's like, well, I can make the company money. In his shoot interview with Colt Cabana, that's what he said. It's like, I have these opportunities to help you make money. Like, why can't we take them?
Right. Yeah, well, at that point, they're very much – I guess that's it. They very much did not want to create a star.
I never understood the argument, though, because, like, let's say you put a star over everybody, right? Like, they all leave eventually anyway. No matter what, you're going to have that down year. So why not just do it anyway for the gain you're going to get while the star is there?
Because Vince has to win.
Yeah, right. And that's the problem.
He can't. That's the problem. And I think which documentary was I watching or we were talking about where we're listening to Vince? Well, I think maybe the Bret Hart one comes to mind. Just the back and forth and dealing with talent is in the mindset that he had going into this the Montreal screw job, which was, no, I'll be able to convince him. Right. And then that leverage not always being there anymore when people have their own names or their own gimmick and they can make money somewhere else, they have leverage. So everything, all of that has gone away. Where it's like, they're no longer, the Brock Lesnar era is over because they're not going to come in with the real names anymore. If Brock Lesnar, his name is now Chase Dixon, just something stupid.
You gotta find the two famous people. That's the, you have to find the two famous people.
Like people and mix it up, but what they do is they probably use that Royal Rumble tumbler,
right?
With the name, and then on one tumbler. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Sylvester Schwarzenegger, right?
So stupid.
Yeah.
Look, they are relaxing that a little bit. They are letting people come in with their names now, but there was a long period where they didn't. Like CM Punk was like the last one to get in before they shut that policy down.
Yeah, Daniel Bryan was never Daniel Bryan. We just kind of forget that. But yes.
Bryan.
And I think now they're doing it only because they know that these guys made their names on the independent scene, so we're going to want to see them on their show.
Right.
So Adam Cole, is Adam Cole because we want to see Adam Cole.
Right.
He's not going to be Harvey Tyler or whatever, I don't know.
But you notice they had Drew McIntyre, right? He goes away. He goes back to his real name, which is Drew. What the fuck is it now? Galloway, right? When he comes back, it's got to be McIntyre again.
Yeah. Yeah. And I just see that's now the commonplace thing. You got to leave and make your name somewhere else and then come back.
Right.
Which kind of defeats the whole need to have a performance center and a training center and all that kind of stuff. If that's the way to get to the top anyway.
Well, I will say, to bring it back, that's exactly what Lesnar did. Like he was a wrestler, but then he went away and made his name.
Yeah.
And then he came back, but he didn't make his name the way wrestlers make their names. He made his name in a legitimate fighting thing. And then he came back and he was infinitely more special.
And he wasn't like in 2002 to 2004, it's a different Brock Lesnar because it's a Brock Lesnar that's molded. It's a molded Brock Lesnar.
Yeah.
It's a WWE created creation. And when he comes back in 2011, he's Brock Lesnar.
Yeah.
It's a different guy. It's guy, he's wearing those shorts with the ads on them. It's like, this is a legit person now, a superstar.
Yeah. I will remember the night he comes back. Like,
yeah,
the pop is insane. He kills John Cena. And just the way, again, I talked earlier about the little things he does, just him kicking his hat out of the ring.
It's the hat kick was incredible.
It's a touch that he wouldn't have done in 02 or 03.
Yeah.
And it's an incredible thing. And what we said about that match too with him and Cena is I can't believe that match delivered the way it did at the time. Because at the time we were like, oh, it should be good.
Yeah.
But then I mean, that's legitimately a top 50 match in company history, and I'm sure some people have it higher.
But that was a movie. That was a legit movie without cinema cameras. They gave us a movie.
Right. And Cena did
it didn't have a good ending, but Cena was great. No, Cena was great in that.
Yeah, and I think the ending could have been forgiven if Cena didn't come out and cut that stupid promo about how he was hurt and he had to go away for a while.
And then he came back a week later.
And was fine. But yeah, obviously the wrong finish to that thing. But I don't think that finish hurt Brock nearly as much as the next three matches he had.
You're talking about all three Triple H matches? Yeah.
Yeah. Imagine having him. Imagine they only had him 1 year. Because I don't know how long his first contract was, but if they only had him 1 year, you have him fill up that time with Triple H matches.
Yeah, that's
the first one was
fine.
And
they had a stacked roster. They still had a stacked roster at that point.
Yeah, Maybe it's because they're trying to keep him away from, like, contention for things. I mean, I don't know if they think that far into things, but, like, so it's like you don't want him – you're in the midst of the CM Punk title run, right? You don't want him going after CM Punk as champion because obviously he's going to become champion right away, right? So you busy him with Triple H, someone who's kind of so separate from everything that he can't affect what Lesnar's actually doing on the show.
Yeah, 100%. He only challenges for the title for the first time in 2014 in the summer with Cena.
Yeah.
So it's a whole 3.5 years where he's kept separate from all of that.
Right.
So it's fine. I mean, it doesn't even – he goes over – he even wrestles Punk a year before going for the the championship himself.
In an incredible
I think
match.
It was just – it was one of the best matches in the last 20 years, yeah, in WWE for sure.
I think for my
– but
Go on.
Well, I'm just saying, you know, they – I think that the whole it's funny because we're so used to Lesnar's champion. We're so used to the whole sporadic appearances. But for 3.5 years, he's never in the title picture.
2.5 because he comes in at 12.
Was it 12? I was thinking 11. Yeah, so it's 12. So 2.5 years, there's no championship matches for him.
Right. And then he comes in and steamrolls the champion.
Which was great because you never saw that before or since. You don't see and that's what we're saying is probably they're going to need to be doing those matches more and more because they're too predictable. Like, okay, it's going to be 40 minutes and we only pay attention when they go to the finishing moves sequence.
Yeah, and we were talking about earlier too, again with his little things. I challenge any listener to go back and watch that match with Cena at SummerSlam 14. Check out all the little things that Lesnar does in between moves. He's filling up every moment. He's not the type of wrestler who, like, does something and then just waits around and looks at the crowd. Like, everything is filled up character-wise. From the bell to bell, he is in character as, quote-unquote, Brock Lesnar. And it's great.
And that's one of the important things – it's one of the important things that the internet community doesn't get, which is where they're always, you know, crapping on Lesnar. And I don't know how much of that is, like, WWE just, like, putting that out there themselves and then, you know, the marks think it's legit news and, you know, oh, we don't like him. No, I'm sorry, because every time he's out there, that match has an air of importance to it. It has a different air around it where, like, I'm watching it, whereas the other ones, I'm, like, half in and half out because it takes that predictable mold.
Right.
So that's the thing where it's like, yeah, no, he is the best performer. I mean, he's easily, for me, the best performer in the last 5 years, easily. Maybe the last 10 years.
Yeah.
Easily. I would 100% agree. And I think that people need to understand that he's not just good now because he's got the moveset. He's got the little things where you can tell that there's a real genius at work there because like we were talking about the way his matches start. For them to start that way and every start of the match is different, not just from the match before it, but different from anything we've seen.
Right.
That's talent.
Yeah. And then even with that, he also has this weird third gear he gets into late in matches that guys – like I used to see it a lot with AJ Styles from around 2015, 16, before he came into the company because he doesn't have it anymore, where like if the match kind of got like – a bit out of hand for him, like in terms of like he starts to lose the match. It's like he upped the intensity and the urgency. And you actually see that a lot in Lesnar matches. A great example is the three-way with Cena and Rollins and him at the Rumble in 2015.
Love that match.
It's so good. And like he's out of the match for a while, but when he comes back in, it's insane. Like, and it's all his energy. Because if Cena was making that comeback, he'd be going through the same motions, right? But Lesnar just has this different energy when he's doing it. And I don't know where he learned it. I don't think you can teach it. I just think it's something that he's innately great at.
Yeah. That's when he's just going after, like he's hitting the suplexes really hard and really fast.
Yeah. But then filling
that was happening at that point?
Yeah, but then filling the time in between. Like, he'll hit the suplex, he's still in the match. He's not posing to the crowd, but he's sharing enough with the crowd that you're enraptured with his performance. It's like what you said about Orton, where he's playing to the audience without playing to the audience.
Yeah.
It's exactly what he's doing there. Maybe Orton taught him. Maybe he learned it from Orton. But like, he's just.
Well, I mean, they all came up in the same year, so.
What a class.
Batista
that is.
Also did the little things well. Yeah, well, yeah, because Batista, I mean, the whole build up with Triple H was all the little things that Batista was doing.
Yeah.
Backstage. Yeah. Yeah, what a class. Yeah.
Yeah, Batista, Jim Cena, Cornette, brother. Orton, and Lesnar. And yeah. Shelton.
And Shelton. Yeah, who should have been pushed way higher than he was.
Yeah. Do you think they all banged his wife? Found...
Oh, whose wife?
Jim Cornette's.
Is that the... What was the...
Yes, that's
what
one
was
of the
allegation?
That, well, the allegation is that, like... I don't know. Like, people would come over to his house and take care of his wife.
Oh, gosh. Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Bum.
And he'd be watching?
Bum, 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 bum.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. Anyway. Yeah, no, because I thought WrestleMania 21 with Shelton was the breakout. That was it. I was like, all right, he's arrived. And then he had that match with Michaels. I was like, all right, he's arrived. That's it. And
yeah.
Then that was it.
Well, then they gave him his mom.
See, yeah, that's Vince. That's Vince. That's 1,000%. You will never see that again when Triple H takes over booking. You will never see that kind of crap again.
It's funny. As much as we shit on Triple H, like when he takes over booking, I'm actually quite optimistic.
Well, of course, because he knew how to book himself.
Yeah, it's like so long as he's not involved.
Yeah, no, it's not. He's going to be fine. He's going to have a lot to prove. When he has something to prove, he's great.
Yeah. When he's clinging to
his
position.
Remember, when he wasn't with Stephanie yet, he had something to prove. That was the best. When he wasn't married yet and he had something to prove.
Yeah.
Those are the best years of his career.
Yeah.
So, yeah. No, I have no problem with that. You're never going to see Shelton Benjamin, Mother Angle type stuff. You're never going to see urine being thrown in people's faces again. You're not going to see... you're not going to see every black guy is not going to have to dance. That's right. Another thing that's not going to happen anymore.
Right.
Yes.
I think Shelton is hurt by the people on top of the promotion at that point. Like, not that he's not good, but like... Lesnar can't really talk either. I don't think Shelton was a great talker either, but I don't think he had the magnetism that Lesnar had. Like, we say that Shelton needed to be pushed more, but he was Intercontinental Champion for a real long time.
He was. I will give him that, but the title didn't mean anything anymore at that point.
No.
That's the one takeaway.
But at least they put him on pay-per-view with the title.
They did. You know, like, they did. 2004, they tried a real big push with him, yeah.
Yeah, and it lasted 2005 as well. He was there. He was in the mix. Like, I just like who's he going to supplant up top? Is he going to supplant Cena? No. He's not going to.
I have no problem with him not supplanting people. I just want to see him in more important matches that display what he was capable of.
Well, that's the problem with the current. Like, it's funny. That's because, like, there's a feeling amongst certain fans where it's like, oh, if your guy isn't the champion, you're upset with the company. But the problem with it, it's like there's a bit of truth to that, but it's yes and no, because the only guy they put substantial time and investment into is the champion.
Yeah.
They used to put investment into everyone. So it's like you could like Mr. Perfect in the 90s. He's not the champion, but they gave him lots of time and he was fun to watch. And, you know, like now if you're not the champion or involved in the top two feuds, you're just kind of aimless. You're getting like look at Ricochet. What is happening with Ricochet?
Yeah. I
mean, it's absurd to me that this guy is not – look, I think they should be building the promotion around him. But if you're not going to do that, at the very least, have him out there in matches all the time.
Yeah, let him do what he does.
Yeah.
Like, and that's what we look back on, like, when, you know, Angle wrestles Michaels. It's like they're just going to let them do what they do. You know, WrestleMania 21, it's like they're just going to let them do what they do. Okay, let them do what they do. That's fine. I don't need it for a championship. That's it. That's all we're asking for. But they don't do that. So it's like I just want to see them do what they do in the best way that they do it. That's why I like them in the first place. So why don't we just get back to that? And that's what they don't do.
Well, just play to everybody's strengths instead of playing to everybody's weaknesses. Or trying to fit people into becoming stronger at things they're not great at.
Right.
Like not everybody has to talk. Not everybody has to talk.
But left to his own devices, that's what would have happened to Lesnar. Like left to like if Lesnar didn't have that bargaining power when he came back, that's the mold they would have put him in because they tried it in 2012.
Right.
Those feelings that you're feeling, John, are feelings. of fear. That's... Like, I remember that. I was like, is he a psychologist? Like, what? what am I supposed to think of this guy?
That's piss going down your leg.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, how many
you
takes?
Know urine?
You understand the
No, it was live. It was also live. It was, right. He was dying out there.
Well, I remember when they cut up, when they had the cut up interview with him sitting backstage. That was great. But I'm sure they took a lot of takes, and it's cut up, and he's really saying like four things. But yeah, you throw him out there with John Laurinaitis cutting promos on John, like the guy with the least personality in the world out there with Lesnar. Like, you know, you're sending him out there to die, basically.
Yeah. For what? Because you have a mold of what a top guy should be. No, come on. You're just wasting time up there. That's what 2003 Lesnar was towards the end, because it was like, all right, I mean, he's wrestled his matches with Angle, and I really did not appreciate that Iron Man match, I got to tell you. Because
no,
it's like, I don't need to see them using chairs on each other. I don't want to see that. I get you're trying to turn him heel. I get it. Thank you. But I want to see these guys wrestle. They only need to wrestle. That's it. And then after that, it's like he's right back in with The Undertaker in some sort of, what was it, a Four Corners match?
Yeah, I think so.
That was like the Nadir pay-per-view of 2003, where Vince is wrestling his daughter, and Undertaker is back with Lesnar. It's like, ugh. And it was terrible. And it was just, and then it's like, so he doesn't do anything significant until Eddie Guerrero.
Yeah.
At that point. So but they're having him talk every week, and it's like, I don't need to see this.
No. No, it was a waste. It was a complete waste of a guy in his prime where you just have nothing creative for him.
Well, that's the thing. So if they're having him wrestle and do what he does he even leave at that point? Because I could see him getting to the point where it's like, I'm tired of this. I don't want to be traveling the world just to pick up a microphone and do something I don't want to do, memorize all these lines.
Right. I think it had a lot to do with the travel, and he would have been traveling anyway with the wrestling. Yeah. But, you know, but they could have eased his schedule back maybe. I mean, this is a guy you probably want to go out of your way to keep. Right?
Yeah.
Now, yeah. How does his match catalog stack up against the greatest of all time?
Who are the greatest of all time that we're going to say? A Michaels, Flair, Angle?
Well, Michaels, Flair, Angle. Did we put Undertaker in there?
He's got a bunch.
Yeah, but you can almost cancel Undertaker out because of all the bad stuff.
Right.
Brett.
Well, look, I guess what we could say is that he is a very high percentage because he doesn't wrestle that often.
Yeah, but I mean, does he have the same that kind of actually cuts both ways. Like, the percentage is good, it can be bad, but it could also be good, right? Because let's say Kurt Angle wrestles like 1,000 matches and like 20 of them are 4 stars. I'm sure it's more than that, but let's just say, right? And Lesnar wrestles 100 matches and 20 of them are 4 stars. There's a definite advantage there for Lesnar, right?
Yeah, well, I guess why I say percentage is because it's like, well, that's he's not going to have as large of a catalog as those other guys.
No, and I think that's why he doesn't get lumped into the conversations of like greatest of all time. I think there's a couple reasons, but I think that's the main one, is that when you look at it, he doesn't have the catalog. He doesn't have the thousands of matches. But I think he has he's up there in terms of number of great matches.
Yeah, and he does have a career. I mean, we're going to take a large swath of time out, but his career does span 18 years now.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, look, SummerSlam 02 was his first really good match, I think, with The Rock. And then a second one, I think, was with Angle. And he had, you know, the series with Angle, but you know, he was a monster at that in those days, you know.
To bring
him down to have a great workmate match was like with Guerrero was not believable.
I think you have to pardon me. I think you have to include the Hell in a Cell with Undertaker. I know you don't like it, but like it's kind of like universally loved, right? So like,
is it? Wow.
Yeah.
I just never got it that match.
Yeah, I mean, like it's really well loved. I think
it's
really
fair
good.
Enough. Yeah.
Yeah. Look, like his first run is really good, but then when he comes back, I think when he comes back is where you're edging a lot of matches close to the 5-star range, and maybe some are.
Yeah, the first one with Cena, definitely.
Punk.
Punk is the next one. That's the great one.
Yeah, Punk.
So he's wrestled now. So that's his fifth match, and two of them are classics.
Yeah. Then he wrestles Big Show and Undertaker. They're fine for what they are. The Undertaker moment's amazing. He wrestles Cena. It's not a five-star match, but, like, it's maybe the most unique.
But the thing is like, you know, there's a lot of five-star matches you don't want to watch again. That's a match you're going to want to watch again.
Yeah,
it's a five-star experience.
For sure. I'd entertain the argument, for sure. So you got three then. Then his next match against Cena again, which is very good. Then he's got the triple threat at the Rumble.
That's another five-star match.
Yeah.
I gave that five stars.
So did I. And then you have the match with Reigns at WrestleMania. I don't think it's five, but it's not far.
It's definitely a four.
I think it's even closer. I think it's closer to five than four.
What I'm saying is definitely at least four.
Oh, at least.
It doesn't give it. We don't remember it fondly because of the, you know, the finished with somebody else.
Right.
And we hated the buildup for it, but it was a great match.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So, like, look at the batting average here, and, like, if you were to, like, I don't know many wrestlers that have more five-star matches than him.
Yeah, so that's four excellent matches, and in about, what, eight tries?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's insane. It's an insane. And look, 2016 is not a great year for him, but I think the match with Goldberg at 17,
What was 2016?
He's in the Rumble.
With Ambrose, right?
He fights Ambrose.
Yeah, he's in the Rumble, Ambrose, yeah.
He fights Orton, which is interesting. I don't think it comes close to these ones, but I think it's a fun match. Then he has the Goldberg series, and that's really interesting. Like, again, like, yeah. And I think his match at WrestleMania 33 with Goldberg is legit great. It's 5 minutes, but, like, it's 5 minutes of them just throwing bombs at each other, right?
Was it only 5 minutes? I thought it was 8 minutes.
No, it's maybe, but it's short. It's not long, but I love it.
But it was very good.
I think it's a legit great match. I have that match at four stars. Like, I think it's just, I don't know what they could have done more. Then you have the four-way at SummerSlam 2017, which is also, I think, at least four stars.
I never saw that one.
It's really good. It's with Joe, Strowman.
I regretted Reigns. That because I heard it was good at the time, and I remember regretting not being able to see it.
The rest of the show is not good, so, you know, go out of your way to see that. So, like, look, like, when I did the project, I tracked all the four-star matches I had, right? I have Brock ninth. With, like, the most, just in number, most four-star matches.
Oh, okay.
Right? I have him ninth. Above him, I have Styles, Undertaker, Orton, Rock, Angle, Jericho, Michaels, and Cena.
Yeah, and all of those guys had way more pay-per-view, way more pay-per-views, period.
Okay.
Than him. They must have had five times more pay-per-views, at least.
Yeah, for sure. And in some cases, 10 times or more.
Because
right?
We're talking about the pay-per-view era, like, all of those guys come from the at least 12 pay-per-views per year era.
Right.
Except for Styles, because, you know, he's a late addition, but, you know, it's Styles. But, yeah, that's quite impressive.
It's incredibly impressive. And it's more impressive when you think he only has 54 pay-per-view matches.
Oh, that's it? It's only 54?
It's 54.
Wow. Yeah, because I remember when I was keeping track in the late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah.
That's when already those guys, like the Big Shows, Undertaker, Kane, Edges, Angle, they're all up in the 100 at that point.
Yeah.
So all of them had like 100 pay-per-view matches almost.
Orton has 150 before 2020.
Okay.
To give you some context. Yeah. Triple H like 120, Undertaker's like 120. Like it's all up around that number, right?
Right.
So to have a similar number of this is why I think his catalog actually should get more consideration than it does, because he has the same amount of great matches in a third of the time.
Yeah, so I'm okay with that. Yeah, no, in terms of he's one of the best of all time.
I mean, who, like, if you were to rate total packages, who's ahead of him?
I can't say anybody because he's got the work rate.
Right.
He's got the star power and the work rate. Maybe in total packages, Rock.
Maybe, yeah. Maybe Savage. I could see Savage, maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
Savage never felt as special.
No, like Savage is like eights across the board, like 10 for charisma and eights across the board for everything else.
The only thing I would say about Savage, this is something we didn't talk about, I don't think, when we did the podcast on him, was that I don't think anybody – I think his biggest strength as a performer was the ability to bring out the emotion in matches.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Lesnar's the same way.
But it's different. It's a different emotion. You're right. It is an emotion, but it's a different emotion.
Yeah, but Lesnar's is the fight. And yeah. Savage is the store.
But, like, Hogan's not a total package like Lesnar is.
No.
Austin. Maybe Austin.
Yeah, totally different, though, eh? He's, yeah. Like, his numbers are stacked up on the charisma side and completely on the other side.
Yes and no. He had his work rate moments as well, right?
I'm talking later in the career where he's, you know, Stone Cold Steve Austin. Because I remember when they booked that match on Raw, I was like, I don't want to see that on Raw.
No.
That should be a legit program. But there was just something about it. I didn't want to see them together because they were two different eras of wrestlers. They belonged in two different – I didn't like seeing them in the ring together at WrestleMania 20. I didn't like that for some reason. I was just like, I'm okay with Goldberg in there. I'm okay with that. I'm not okay with Austin because Austin is a different – it was a different company. It was a different era. And we're in an athletic era now, and Austin couldn't be athletic anymore. And that's why the company had to change for him.
Right.
But I didn't want to see them in the ring together. It's kind of like I don't want to see Austin in the ring with Hogan. There's just something off about that, too. I don't know if you – like, I didn't want to see Austin stomp Hogan into a corner. Do you know what I mean? Like, I didn't want to see that. I want to see The Rock and Rock Bottom Hulk Hogan and Hulk Hogan kick out. I'm fine with that.
Right.
I don't want to see Austin like give him the middle finger and pound him into the. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't want to see that happen to Hulk for some. It's just not. You know what I mean? There's like that flow of certain things that you want to see.
Right.
And that never did. Like, I didn't want to see Lesnar F5 Austin. I just didn't. Yeah, Lesnar. Yeah, I didn't want to see. Exactly. I didn't want to see that. I'd like to do it to Michaels because I want to see Michaels flip out of the first couple ones and hit the super kick.
Yeah, and almost beat him.
Yeah, that's what I want to see. I don't want to see Austin with a convoluted stunner that's, you know, I'm sure Lesnar would sell it fine, but I'm going to have trouble believing it. You know, it's just he's a – I think you get what I'm saying. There's certain styles I just didn't want to say – I didn't want to see.
Yeah. But aside those couple of guys we mentioned as total packages, I don't know. I don't know who else kind of – who lives up to it.
I mean, I would say – Angle is a very close type.
Yep.
He's the athletic guy. He's legit. He could legit kill you. And he has charisma.
Right. Different charisma, but yes. Although.
Very different.
Although, when he got serious, like, his charisma was similar.
06 angle, the killer angle. He was great.
Yeah. I mean, I would even argue in 01 when he's like, got Rock and he's like, I'm going to break your fucking ankle. Like.
Yeah, but that's what he should have been the whole time, and then turned him into a clown. Yeah, that was Triple H that did that to him.
Of course,
that was yeah. But I mean, once in a while is fine, as long as the solid character is Kurt Angle wearing the black, you know, the black jumper and doing that's better.
Yeah. So he's definitely up there, and I think should be in the conversation. Yeah.
This was fun. I didn't think we'd get that far with Lesnar, but it's true. You rack up all the numbers, you really do see that he is legitimately one of the best. Yeah, there's no. I was never comfortable with anybody saying, you know, oh, he's not deserving of the title. I'm like, no, he's totally. We come from the Hogan era, so we're used to like the top guy showing up once in a while.
Yeah,
it makes him more special.
Well, and like I want the top guys, and this is I think we talked about this, but I want the top guys to be the best at something. They don't have to be the best at everything, but they have to be the best at something. And with Lesnar, we get a guy who's the best at many things, which is awesome.
Yeah.
Listen, if you like this show, check out everything that's going on the North South Connection Podcast Network. Mondays when you're listening to Montreal to Memphis right now. We never say the name of our show. What's wrong with us?
We never do. But we remember at the end.
Yeah. By the way, this was Montreal to Memphis. That runs...
It was Montreal to Memphis. And if you guys don't know why... It's because we've never explained why.
No, although I do play the Rougeau song at the beginning of every episode. So.
Okay, so that's why.
Put it together. You know, we're from Quebec. We talked about the Rougeaus once. Talked about
how... And we've been to Egypt. We've been to Memphis and Egypt, so that's why.
So yeah, that drops that. Monday on
Pyramids.
Yeah, we understand you're making a reference to another city named Memphis. I get it.
Sphinx.
Sphinx. Also on Mondays, the year that was, which
Shakespeare.
Is Chaucer.
Chaucer.
Tim Canterbury. Canterbury Tales.
The Canterbury Tales.
Chaucer.
Was that when he was interviewing a potential new employee, or was it like that company survey?
So we're talking about the British office. He just called him in to give him like a report or like a, maybe like a performance review or something.
Right.
Tim Canterbury. Tim
Canterbury, Canterbury Tales.
Chaucer.
Chaucer.
Shakespeare. And he looks in the camera on Shakespeare. Shakespeare.
Guys, you have to watch The British Office.
Yeah,
please,
if you're like, but you know what? People who've watched The Office one, the U.S. one first, they don't respond as well to it.
I didn't respond the very first time I saw the very first episode of The Office because I didn't get it.
No.
Because I didn't get the British style, but the British style is so much better than what we do. They're funnier people than we are, guys. Sorry.
Yeah, and this episode.
They're so much funnier than
they also don't overstay their welcome. Like,
They're in and out. They only did 9 episodes or something. What is that?
It's 12 and then a Christmas special.
Yeah.
And you're out. And it has, like, it wraps up the love story in the best possible way. Like, have you watched The American Office?
I only saw a couple episodes of it, and I was like, all right, it's fine. I'm okay with it.
But it's good. I like it. I think they developed the characters well. But one of the things that is hurt by it is that, like, the Tim and Don characters get together, I think, by season 4. They're married. And, like, there's 9 there's 9 seasons.
Yeah. See, the whole thing was – it was the tension that was the whole – anyways, you guys watch it. Become British, and you'll see.
Yeah. So also on Mondays, the year that was, I'm going through the pay-per-view years. Check it out. Tuesdays, we go to the Ruthlessly Aggressive podcast. Jacob Williams is going through the Ruthless Aggressive era, talking about, I don't know, shows like that went on Raw, SmackDown. Are you a big fan of the Ruthless Aggressive era, Reg?
Ruthless Aggression. Ruthless. Very aggressive.
Yes.
Very aggressive. Yeah. Oh, you got the voice. No, wait. Do it again.
Ruthless Aggressive.
Yeah, it's aggressive. It was what it was. It needed to be way better because they had, like, literally every talent you could imagine. It should have been so much better.
Right. So that's going on Tuesdays. Opposite Tuesdays, myself, JT, and Jenny doing TNA Never Dies that we mentioned earlier, going through the early TNA pay-per-views. Wednesday, Chad Campbell, Carolina Dream.
Yeah, that's about the wrestling company, right? Not about a bunch of girls with bikinis?
No, it's about both.
Okay.
Wednesday, Chad Campbell, Carolina Dream, and he's going through some obscure WCW NWA matches for the Place to Be Nation Stretch Project. The greatest WCW match of all time. What do you think that is, the greatest WCW match of all time?
Flair Steamboat?
Yeah, that's probably going to win. I'm up to 87.
But does that count as – is that NWA? Does that they count that?
Yeah,
I guess that's the one, right?
Yeah, I've never – I don't know if I've really seen those kind of top to bottom, so I'm going to – explore them soon. I'm in 87, and the best match I've seen is Flair and Garvin from Starrcade. I loved it so much.
Okay.
And on opposite, he's doing the Fighting Spirit of 06, where he's talking through the year 2006. Thursday, Extreme Three-Way Dance with John D'Amato, JT, and Jenny. They're going through ECW. And opposite of that is Wrestling War Zone with JT and Chad, where they're going through Monday Night War. Saturday, No Holds Barred with JT and I. Pretty packed schedule. Check it out. If you like the shows, subscribe, give us a rating, share to your friends. Reg, Brock Lesnar, we're in agreement.
We're in agreement. Lesnar is the bestner.
The bestner. That's a great entry. That's the best exit you've had so far.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I only thought about that 2 minutes ago.
Don't lie. You brought it up.
You were talking. I was like, no. I wrote it down.
You brought it up to me before the show. You said, I'm going to end with this.
Oh, yeah. The screaming fight that we got into. All right.
Yeah. Bye,
you
everyone.
You urged me not to say it, but
don't mention the screaming fight. Bye.